When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah. Yeah, what do you want? Beak or jaws? Feathers or fur? Sharp teeth or feet with claws? Whatever's preferred. They'll grant you all last requests to steady your nerves. Then podcast the body parts get severed and served. Bring your weak shit where the wolf and owl are. That ain't just a mistake, that's an awful howler. Both of them are known to pull up at your shows. Have the crowd witnessing a murder like they rolled in with a gang of crows. Fuck the censorship, let them see the whole thing. They stay dressed to kill, never sheep's clothing. Dark enough to turn the sun to the moon. You'll see nothing, all you hear's a huff a puff. Expect killings, red spilling and flesh ripping. Impressive in it, the death bringing his head spinning. Just kidding, every word in his song's about two grown men dressed up as a bird and a dog.
Yo! Oh, let me
yes,
take the
yes,
lead.
Yes, 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 yes. Wolf and Al inside the... Oh, no, that's the same as I do every week.
Let me try
to say it different. Like, I tell you what, throw something at me. Let me try.
Okay, all right.
Okay, guys, give me a thing.
I want you to do this. Like, I'm the first customer in your new restaurant in the centre of town. You're opposite Nando's and Bella Italia. It's a little independent run thing, right? You are serving...
What's it called? Wolf and Owl?
No. Oh, it can be Wolf and Owl. Yeah, the Wolf and Owl, and it is a burrito joint.
Okay, fine.
Okay, I'll walk in. One, two, three, I'll walk in. Intro.
Hi, welcome to the Wolf and Owl Burrito
Shack.
Sorry,
I'm going to go across the road.
Oh, well, listen... totally fine if you want to do that. But what
when
I would
walk
say
into
is,
an independent restaurant, I want the feeling of fizz in my mouth straight away.
Well, listen, what I can tell you is we have got a hot pepper mix that is nothing but fizz here. Listen, have you had a burrito before, sir?
Yeah, I had one 5 years ago when I was traveling Mexico. Okay. Let me tell you something.
I don't want to insult Mexico. What I can tell you is, you haven't had burritos until you've had a Wolf and Owl burrito. And people often say to me, is that what's in it? And obviously, no, it's not. It's a funny story about why it's called a Wolf and Owl. It's actually me and the co-owner.
Sorry to be obtuse, but do you realise your flies are undone?
No, I didn't realise that. And sorry to be obtuse, but it's actually obtuse, not obtruse. You're a bit like, you remind me a bit of the co-owner, actually, the wolf. He's always fucking up words.
Listen, if you're my customer, you should be a little bit more cheery with me, and the back chat should be a little bit more fresh. Hopefully, like your herbs and vegetables here.
Well, listen, we have got nothing but the... Is this going on too long, do you think, this bit?
I mean, the intro I was thinking, you were like, yo, welcome to the Wolf and Owl Burrito Bar. I hope you like fiery.
Oh, God, yeah, I should have done it like that. But we got too far into the role play thing. I just sort of...
I enjoyed the role play. Actually, we should say to listeners, this is an unusual recording.
Why?
Because it is being done on a Sunday night.
Yeah.
It is presently 8:23. And it's been I've had my first big night out since Grace was born last night.
You were at a wedding, right?
I was at a wedding, boy. Yeah.
Talk me through it. How did it go?
It was an amazing wedding. It was a beautiful, beautiful thing. The party side of weddings is, when you're not drinking, is like, I was genuinely about one.
So you didn't drink last night?
No, I had like one. I had like, just to sort of like toast a couple. I had like a champagne, a bit of Bucks Fizz, but that was, I kept it chill.
Mm.
But I was like the only, I think it was like me and a couple of sort of like old ladies who were the only people who were actually there for the wedding cake. Like, wedding cakes are sort of like a bit null and void now, aren't they? Do you think? They look great.
Well, wedding cakes are a visual element rather than a...
Do you know this is a really good business for someone who wants to look at sort of like earning a couple of quid? I think actually a foam or even like a cardboard wedding cake business, or like recycled plastics or whatever, and you just make what looks like a beautiful wedding cake. Because honestly, I'd say in the last 5-10 weddings I've been to, no one gives a shit. Everyone's just smashed by the wedding cake time. Even the cutting cake thing. there's so many different elements to a wedding. No one's even going to watch like the cutting of the, you know. I sort of felt for the groom. He you know, this is a sad
Tom, environment. Are you suggesting that they do a cutting of the cake where they cut into a foam cake?
I think we get rid of the cutting of the cake. I think people walk past and say, oh, that's a lovely looking cake. And slowly it will just not become a thing.
Well, I don't know why that has to be replaced. Why does it have to be replaced with a plastic cake?
Well, like you say, it's a nice visual. It's a lot. And also, I really like recycled cardboard, recycled plastics. It's good to get them more of them out there and stuff.
But can they be recycled for something that's actually useful?
rather than a
pretend cake that you're just going to look at.
I'm thinking about whether now this is, I've slipped up a bit by giving someone else an amazing idea.
Can I tell you something? Can I allay your concerns? I think you're all right.
Really?
Yeah, I think you'd be fine.
If anyone who is an expert in moulding and shaping wants to get in touch and just like chat over sort of like this idea. I mean, what could be quite nice actually is if you had like a sort of piece of the cake you could cut out of it and then it looked like a proper nice cake inside.
Yeah. It sounds a lot more complicated than just making a cake though.
Yeah, but people spend fortunes on cakes that don't get eaten. I literally looked at all that cake
but the cake does get eaten, doesn't it?
Well, you know, this is the awful thing as well. A lot of pressure was placed on me. I was waiting with these ladies once the cake had been cut. And
where's everyone else then?
Everyone else is partying, getting smashed. Everyone's right. Like,
you're sat bite. Waiting for the you're waiting yeah. for the cake to be.
Yeah,
handed. Isn't that a great situation to be in? You know that basically a third of that cake could be yours if you play your cards.
Yeah, but right. The cake is so big.
And if you've got sharp enough elbows with these other old bitches, you could probably get yourself half.
one of the old girls looked at me and she went, "Oh, it's a big old cake. We're relying on you, Tom, to get through it." I thought there was a lot of pressure to put me on. I had four bits, but I was like, after that, there's only so much buttercream a big man can eat.
What was a sponge?
Oh, mate, it was a beautiful sponge.
Mm.
Soft, delicate. It was, yeah, it was really nice. It was nice.
It was what, sorry?
Delicate. But I meant delicate.
Delicate?
Delicate is what I meant.
Okay,
I knew as soon as the word slothered out of my mouth I don't got it wrong. Delicate, really.
What's
really
funny about that is you sort of talking about how you said delicate. You also used a word that isn't a word. There's no word slothered. It's like fucking Inception with you, mate.
I like. I've said this so many times. I like making up these words. But yeah, it was really nice. You know, lovely. A really nice curd and a nice jam through it. A bit of butter icing. Curd is an underrated thing, I think, within humanity. Don't turn your nose up. Curd, I think you, like, if anyone I know in the world should be sitting with a big jar of curd and his hands in it, like Winnie the Pooh and some money, it should be you. Yeah.
Just a t-shirt and no trousers.
Like a little boy at the beach.
Romish has got his dick out again and opening a bottle. I've got his hand in a jar of curd, cock out under his t-shirt. That's when he's his happiest.
A big flappy old Arsenal 1999 cup winner, double winning team t-shirt. Tony Adams on the front. All covered in blueberry and fucking lemon curd.
I went out for Lisa, it was Lisa's auntie's birthday today.
Oh, amazing.
A surprise birthday party at this pub. And one of the things I noticed is when you're out with your other half's family, I know that this is a bit of a running theme from last week because we talked about me being inconsiderate and you also mirroring that inconsiderate behaviour. But one of the things I noticed is you can't say, like everybody on Lisa, you can't say anything about you sort of being in the right in any situation, do you know what I mean? Without, before you get absolutely jumped on. So, and I hadn't even said anything. What I said was, somebody said, "How's the new house?" Right? And I went, "Oh, well, actually, I was a bit stressed on the day that we moved in. And the reason I was stressed is because I was being a bit unreasonable, right? Because I wanted everything to be right and there were some things fucking up. I don't know if you remember, but
yeah, remember.
Lisa ended up having to put me to bed. She sent me to bed
on that day.
Yeah. So I was just about to say I was quite stressed. And then somebody just jumped in. One of Lisa's family was just, I think Lisa was the one that would have been stressed on the day that you moved in. She, based on what I've heard, I thought, fucking hell.
Yeah, man.
But then I realised that is when you go out with the in-law, that side of the family, you just got to be careful.
Yeah, but you know, no. This is the worst thing, bro. This is the worst thing. is that in-laws and your laws, like your fucking mum and stuff, they all will stick up for, like, they're, like they're every all guy. Like, if I say anything,
my mum doesn't. My mum doesn't.
Doesn't she? Oh, Christ, man. No. Like, if no, I say anything,
my mum's on Lisa's side as well.
Oh, my mum and dad, they're going at me. If I even dare criticise anything Catherine's done.
Oh, mate, oh, that's what I mean. Sorry, yeah. If I say oh, Lisa shouldn't need, like, Lisa, even if I say it as a joke, which is the only time I do say it. What are you talking about? You're lucky to have a woman like Lisa in your...
So, it's the just, same. There's no
I mean, look, I agree. I agree.
There's nowhere, like, there's no solace. There's no solace.
But I agree with everything that's being said. Yes, Lisa would have been much more stressed out in the move than me because she did a lot more of it, bless her heart. Yes, I am
but
lucky
Lisa's
to have Lisa
stronger than you are. You are weak.
Yeah. Yes, but the point I'm trying to make is...
Like,
the
reason- it's like anything, right? You can't compare different strengths to different strengths. Like, you can't look at, like, fucking Eddie Hall and put him up against, I don't know, like fucking Nicholas Lyndhurst as strongmen, right? So Lisa's will for stress is, like, here, and your will for stress is here. So you can't have different levels. So they're so out of order to you for that.
Is your surname originally Maynard? Because you seem to be singing from the same hymn sheet as that lot. Do you know? I don't mind being. I don't mind acknowledging that Lisa, look, Lisa does loads. She's amazing. The thing that upsets me is the insinuation that I don't know that.
Yeah.
I know that Lisa's amazing. I know that I'm lucky to have her in my life. So when people say that to me, I get defensive because I think what that means is you don't think I appreciate her. Do you know what I mean? And then that's, you know, then you start getting to the, you know, I'm like an onion, as you know, Tom. You start getting into layers there where feeling like self-conscious about the fact that I don't show Lisa enough appreciation. One of the things that I've discovered, and I think it's like, I think we when we talked about this last week, this thing that I've become conscious about is my negative reaction to having something pointed out to me that I know is true. Like, my reaction to it is disgusting.
Oh, same.
You know what I mean? Like,
same.
It's really bad. And that's going to be, you know, when you have like things that you want to work on, that's my thing I've got to work on now, is that if somebody points something out to me that I know to be true, a fault in myself or a flaw in myself, I need to go, you're right, and think about working on it. What I don't need to do is go on the fucking ultra offensive defensive mode, which is what I tend to do, man. It's like, this is my new development point for this week.
Literally, I'm looking at a pod. There's two peas in it. One's called Tom, one's called Rom. I'm very much the same. Like this, we just had a lovely day out in Cambridge, which was slightly marred by the fact that, like, even after last week weekend where we like had this massive sort of conversation, but I've like gigged, like, so I've played golf, like I went to a wedding, my mate's wedding, because Catherine had another thing that she had to go to. I stayed out late. It's like, you know that thing where you then get there and you think, oh man, I've dropped a real bollock. Like, I had no, like, and genuinely, I don't get defensive. I get quite down about myself and think I'm a piece of crap.
Oh, no.
When Catherine points out, like, and rightly points out, that I should be doing better and I should be a little bit more, I should be a bit more considerate about things, I don't get defensive. I get really down. I get like a boy who's just like found out that for Christmas he's not getting a bike, he's getting a fucking, I don't know, like a teddy bear. Like, I just literally sat there in this restaurant and she was like, I think you've been a bit inconsiderate, you know. Thursday you gigged and then I stayed and like hung out with another comedian for a bit and then chilled. Friday I went and played 18 holes of golf. Saturday I went out to a friend's wedding. It's like, that's shitty behaviour and I'm pretty embarrassed about it.
That is shitty, man.
Yeah.
That's really
I'm embarrassed about it. And then she said about it and I just sat in this place and I was just like, oh my God, I feel like an absolute piece of dung.
That is bad.
But also, you know, the thing that I realised as well is like...
It's terrible. Go on.
You snake. I was at this wedding yesterday. I realised that how behind the times certain guys that I've grown up with are when it comes to stuff. Oh man, it's insane. When I talk about stuff that I do with Grace and I do with Catherine and that, how our relationship works, it's like how, like, they look at me in this way of like absolutely, like, I can't believe you do that. What? Like it's in, like guys of our age, Ron, who are just like knocked sideways by the fact that I'd be doing a night feed or you know, or all of the night, you know, night feeds. What? What? You're joking? Do you know what I mean? It's like the aggression to it. The reason that one of the reasons I've stopped drinking is like they can't get their computer. You'll have a drink.
I think there's a lot of things at play there. Personally, is I think one of the things is there are some men that like, regardless of the fact that it's 2022, there are some men that don't think it's their place to be doing stuff like that. You know, yeah. and for whatever reason, right? And sometimes, let's be honest, like I have this thing where I think to myself, I want to support Lisa as much as possible. We are in a traditional setup in my house, which is that I work and Lisa doesn't, right?
Yeah.
You know, like that. That's so. What happens is by dint of that, there are certain things that fall in traditional pattern of who's responsible for what, right? And so you try and counteract that as much as you can, and blah blah blah. I think there are different men that think that men should have responsibility for more or less of that, depending on what their viewpoints are. The other thing that I think is a major part of it is groups of men sort of don't like to admit they do stuff like that. Do you know what I mean? There's some sort of, I think individual men are great, right? I think men in a group can be like really tricky to deal with because one, they have a tendency to sort of say, I don't do that, I don't do that. You know, why would I be doing that? Secondly, they have a thing where it is still, I think, the done thing amongst men to slag off your other half, right? Or to complain about them or whatever, right?
And
you talk to blokes individually and they love their wives, or some of them do more than others, to be honest. But anyway, they love their wives, right? But you get men in a group and there's something like men are almost embarrassed to talk positively about their others. It's all like, fucking had to get out, man. Do you know what I mean? Bloody hell. It's like, you know how it can be sometimes. You know, all of that sort of shit. I used to see that in my dad's pub, like men used to talk like that all the time, and I thought that was like of that generation. But actually, I see it with men of our age.
I see it
with men younger than us.
You play golf and people say that. You know what I mean? It's like, I like golf just to get out of the house and just like be outside and chill. Do you know what I mean? I don't do it to get away from Catherine. I do it for my own headspace. Hmm. Whereas you see so many guys, it's just the aggression. Not aggression. Aggression's a wrong word, but it's sort of like the idea that sort of they don't want to be at home. It's like exactly what you said. So true. I find it insane. Like genuinely, like it's like, and like these are people I love dearly. These are friends, guys that I've grown up with. I'm not saying they're bad people. I'm just saying that they're. And also, what I think there can be a slight thing of it's like, if there's a few of you saying, oh, you know, this bit actually bit is so rewarding if you do this with your child or that with your child. There's people who've, I think there's a sort of an element of, I haven't done that. And instead of just going, oh, you know what, I wish I'd been a bit more like that, it's easier to go, oh, fuck off, mate. You know, fuck
That's
it.
A very good point.
You know, and
really
just be
point.
Aggressive about it.
Well, I mean, you're talking about exactly what I'm talking about, which is where somebody points out something that you don't feel comfortable about yourself. And so you just, like, you sort of bite. Do you know what I mean? You sort of go, well, why would you want to do that? Who the fuck does that? Do you know what I mean? It's like, it's an interesting one. God, we've got, Jesus Christ, we are so deep, aren't we? Oh my,
it's a Sunday
God.
Night session, baby. They're always going to be
That's
deep.
What happens with these Sunday, listen, this is what happens with these Sunday night sessions. Tom and I kick back, we get a little bit deeper, we get a little bit under the skin of what these issues are, you know? By the way, but I would say I have significant evidence to suggest that women behave in the same way, based purely on my own. I mean, the number of times that one of Lisa's friends has said something to me, like it's a running joke, and I know that that has been something that's been delivered by the Swan to her group.
Lisa's got a very good turn of phrase as well, hasn't she?
Yeah, but for example, like I'll be like, we'll be on the school run, she'll go, I go, how's it going, Sarah? Yeah, good. We've got a bit of a problem with the bathroom. Like one of the rails is coming off and like a couple of the tiles are a bit loose, so we're trying to get them sorted out. I'd ask you to do it, but we all know how fucking shit you are at stuff like that, aren't you? You're useless bastard, aren't you, when it comes to things like that? I go, sorry, what? I don't recall ever talking to you directly about stuff like this, Sarah. I wonder if this is the work of a chatty swan that has led to this thing. And so now I'm sort of, every now and again, I try and prod and poke to see what's actually being said about me to these women. Do you know what I mean?
That's what I realise when you're arguing, right? Is that they have itemised, Catherine will have like itemised things that are not like really, really piss her off about, like that I do, right? And she, like, if we're having an argument, I'll go, you know, and she will go through an itemised list of exactly what pisses her off and why and how and how many times I do it, right? And if I go, well, there's things that you do that annoy me, and she goes, like what? And I just stand there and go, I sort of can't think of any at the moment. Like, there's times when she does stuff, and I'll go, oh, next time we have an argument, I'll think exactly of that thing. I can never do it. Mm. But
I mean, that's part of the problem, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. We're just rabbits caught in headlights.
Yeah.
It's tough, man.
It's tough. It's tough being married to these women that we're married to.
I mean, they're incredible horrendous. Women, we should say.
No, it's horrendous. Let's be honest. I think what we've come around to is that we're trapped.
My beautiful brethren, you have a big week coming up.
Yeah, we're starting on a new sitcom for Sky.
Excited?
I'm quite nervous, actually. I'm going to be honest with you, I'm quite nervous. What is it, 8:40? I haven't learned the lines for tomorrow yet.
Have you got a lot of lines?
I've got a fair few lines. How do you do it? How do you learn lines?
Let me just tell you something, right?
If you're about to give me a magic...
They're in your brain anyway, you've written it. They're there. You just got to have absolute faith that you just read them tomorrow and relax and they'll soak in.
You reckon?
People put too much pressure on it.
Do you think so?
Yeah. People like phonetically reading them over and over and over and over again. Like if you've written it for a start, that's the big part of it. It's in there anyway. Mm. You know what the scene's direction is. You know where it's going, right?
Yeah.
You know, if you haven't like written a script, you should... Yeah, when you get it, you phonetically read it, it goes in, and then when it comes to the day, like tomorrow, it's in there anyway, and then you can chill and relax.
Was it you that told me that Anthony Hopkins apparently Somebody on King Gary told me that Anthony Hopkins reads his lines 200 times.
Really?
Out loud. And then I just thought, well, if you're doing... I mean, that's a lot of time, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. If you're in a big movie and you're a lead character, must have Benjamin Button. He had loads of dialogue.
Yeah. So how long's a film? Like an hour and a half.
Yeah.
200 times.
Well, I mean,
you've got to write off 10 days.
Well, at least, yeah.
Yeah, I can't do that, mate.
No, just it's there.
I'm giving it half an hour between 9:30 and 10:00, and if it's not in, then good luck to
the director. Just try it 20 times. I bet it'll work for you.
Thank you very much. I'll try that. I had a really embarrassing thing. Well, I just. Do you put notes on your scripts?
Yeah. Yeah. But I work from an iPad because it's 2022. But
I worked with you on King Gary in 2021 and you didn't have any iPad with you. You're writing on fucking paper. So I don't know why you started to like dick swing now.
Just because on the curse we got iPads. What do you mean? Like jot down how you're going to do the line?
Well, I had an embarrassing thing when I did The Reluctant Landlord. I just thought you just had to learn the lines, and then Alison Steadman, who's obviously a legend, came onto set and she had all these little notes and performance things and stuff put on a script, and then I showed her my sides, and my sides were completely clean, just like a tick where I'd remembered the line. And, I actually think it was almost insulting for her to be on the same set as this idiot.
Every process is different. You cut your Lionel Messi is going to be completely different from Phil Bardsley, right?
And yet, they're on a level. Yeah, I get what you're saying.
No, but they're both professional footballers. It's like everyone's going to have their different... You're going to have your different way of getting to where you've got to be. You've just got to rely on, like, finding your way I reckon Alison Steadman and Anthony Hopkins would really struggle to go up and do an hour and a half stand-up special.
Yeah, but...
You remember all of that.
It's totally different.
It's not.
It's totally different.
It's easier to remember lines and stand-up. Infinitely easier. Think about trigger points. Don't, and this is the other mistake, don't even think about your lines. Think about the line coming at you.
Oh, I've got to learn their lines as well.
No, 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 because that's the trigger point, right?
Oh, I see. Yeah, yeah.
Because then you've got a trigger. That's there. It's fresh and it's nice.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. You've got to remember, you've got no one when you're up there. When you're up there doing your stand up, it's just you in the fucking room with the mic, baby, and the audience.
Talking about stand up. I want to talk about something slightly embarrassing that happened to me. So I've just done two nights in Douglas and the Isle of Man.
And here's an interesting fact. Never been to the Isle of Man.
Oh, well, it's lovely. Very nice. Went to a nice vegan cafe, got blueberry pancakes. Oh, very nice. Anyway, on the second night of the gigs, this is so embarrassing. So I walked out on stage. And both nights, by the way, Douglas were up for a gig. They were like, it was like proper nice. Do you know what I've just done? Basically, you've got like a brown, I don't know what it is, in the back behind you, that wall there.
Yeah.
Right? Can you see that brown? What's that thing, that dark circle at the top there? What is that?
Oh, that thing there?
Yeah, what is that?
There.
Yeah, there. What is that?
That is a little nubbin. I'll put in, like, you can put in resistance bands, you can put in like anything, you loop it around there like that, and like that, and then do pull ups or whatever on it.
Yeah. Well, I didn't know what that was, and I tried to just wipe it off my screen. Anyway, that was such a long time.
I like the idea that I stuck that there just to fuck with you.
Anyway, I walk out, and there's a guy in the front row just sat with his mobile phone filming me.
Oh, shit.
Right, so I come out. I start like doing a bit of chat. He's on right on the front row. He's holding it like he's not hiding what he's doing. He's like holding his phone up like that, right? Just like sat there watching me filming it, right? So I do I just sort of say, I didn't want to get into it straight away. So I'm just sort of saying hello to the crowd and stuff like that. And then I go, "Are you filming me?" And he said, "Yeah, I am." And I said, "Well, can you not film me?" And he goes, "I just thought I'd film it. You know, why not?" And then, because I was so flustered, it was so early on the show, I went...
Oh, no.
I went, "Because it's illegal."
Oh, God.
And then he just went, "No, it isn't." And then I just stopped talking until... I just didn't know what to say. Like, I just said it... I was so upset at how nerdily I'd said it. I just went, "Can you not?" And he went, "Well, why not?" And I went, "Because it's illegal." And then he went, "It isn't." And then I was like, "Oh, no, of course it's not. It's not illegal." And then... it's not illegal. And then I just sort of shut down. And then security came over to tell him to put his phone down.
Oh, no, like you've asked.
And then I just had this guy. First of all, it injected a tension into the room that I had to get over, right? Secondly, I just had this guy that I just sort of told off, sat in the front row for the rest of the show. It was awful. Truly awful.
Like, that literally makes me feel sick. You know, front row decorum is a real thing, so I gigged on twice last week, and on Thursday night, gigged at an amazing place in London, one of our favourite venues, and I get on stage.
Can I ask you a question? Just on what you've just said there. For some reason, when you're talking about somebody that you used to go to school with, that may have even been like borderline nonce or shat on a table in front of everybody, you do not even hesitate for a second in giving their full name and address. But for some reason, when talking about where you gigged last week, one of our favourite gigs, you want to anonymise that. I don't understand what your instincts are on this.
Right, so ABC, Always Be Comedy.
Always Be Comedy in Kennington.
One of the best, for me, one of the best places to do stand-up. Like, usually, like, 100%, without a doubt, great, savvy comedy crowd.
Yeah.
But so I was trying all new material, which is always difficult, right? And in the front row was this woman who, I'd say, like, she was late teens, probably early 20s, but she looked like she was having the worst time ever. Like,
right.
And sort of the compere of the evening, Amy had said to me, "Oh, look, there's a lady, a woman in the front who's, I think, could be a little bit tricky as the night goes on." I don't know whether she was just drunk or whatever. But she spent the whole of my... Like, my material was not edgy or, like, I'm not, like... Like, it's not rude, like... But sighing like I was the worst person who'd ever done stand-up, like, genuinely, like... It was a real, like, oh, my God, that, like... Even though other people are laughing and I can hear laughter and I can see laughter. This woman is absolutely destroying this gig for me, right? And then she starts just whispering to her friend. And her friend, to her credit, was going, shut up, he's like, it's really, shut up, it's rude, like that. And she was just, she then found this really funny, right? So then she decided to take it up a level, and everything that I said, she would have like, so I talk about DIY a bit, right? And she just throws in a thing where she just goes, she likes doing DIY. And I went, oh, do you? And started trying to chat to her friend and think, oh, you know, maybe if I involve her and her friend in this, it will cut this awful tension. Yeah, you can sort of diffuse it or whatever. Oh, do you like doing DIY? And the friend's absolutely, like, really
didn't want to be talked to.
Went, no, no, I don't. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. And this girl, that's the only time she laughed when her friend was humiliated. And then I sort of was like, are you all right? You having a good time? And she just like, looked at me. You know, like, she looked at me like I was so beneath her and such a, like she'd come in that night and gone, if I can make this as horrible as I can for at least two or three people, it'll be an amazing night for me. And it's such a shame, right? Because I don't know how you feel, you happened to this, but like, all these people, like, you know, it was fortunate enough as I was leaving to talk to people, and people seemed like they had a really good time. I for 48 hours after, all I could think about was like, why this girl had, like, this woman had been like so rude, and like, what would she have gained from being so like?
I think there is nothing more aggressive or disruptive than somebody at a comedy club who's. Idea it wasn't to go there.
Yeah,
oh my God. Do you know what I mean? Somebody that's been taken.
That's maybe
somebody,
one of the best points I've ever heard in life.
Somebody who's been taken, who wasn't sure about it, being taken across the comedy line, is one of the most disruptive.
That genuinely is such a brilliant observation, right? Because if you got any, if you go to the Wetherspoons, you're not too sure about it, and you sit there going, oh, yeah. Fucking, we could have gone anywhere. That's something. Yeah. But to go to a comedy and sit in the front row.
It's mad. I see it all the time, man. It's like, you know, it's like, I remember before I started touring, I used to think to myself, if you're on tour, then everybody there really likes you. And that's not true. Because what it'd be like a group of four people, and maybe two of them are like really keen to see you, and they go, do you want to go see Ramesh? And then one of them goes, yeah, all right. And then one of them goes, oh, I don't really know. Honestly, try it, you'll like it. And then you see them, just dotted around. There'll be like somebody who's like, fucking hell.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Chicken and what? Do you know what I mean? Yeah, I mean, occasionally I'll get messages from people going, really loved it, my mate absolutely hated it, or whatever.
Yeah, but I don't understand why people feel the need to tell you.
I think they think it's funny, because like they just like, they don't realise that you'll go, oh, that's a shame that somebody didn't have a nice time. They'll just, do you know what I mean? Like,
whether they just think we'll just go, oh, fuck them.
Yeah.
Such a bizarre
actually,
thing.
You just go, oh, that's unfortunate that somebody really hated it. and that's something for me to take to bed with me tonight and agonise well over between 3:45 and 4:30. I'll just be sort of ruminating on that tonight.
I genuinely was sitting there with my daughter, like feeding Grace, just looking at her thinking, I hope you don't ever go to a stand-up show like when you're in fucking early 20s and make someone feel like absolute shit because you don't enjoy this stuff. Like, just going, yeah. If you ever go and watch anyone, babe, like anyone go, and you're not enjoying a show, at least put on a brave face and make the person feel better about themselves.
Yeah. I just think, well, what I would say is there are people that don't like, the people that hate, I know people that hate stand-up comedy because they don't like the idea of somebody trying to make them laugh. Yeah. There's like a reaction against that. And then the other thing is like, I just think when something is trying to be funny and somebody doesn't find it funny, they find it, it makes them angry in a way that, if you went to watch a shit Marvel film, you'd just be like, oh, that wasn't that good. But like, for some reason, comedy, if you watch a comedy, I mean, you'll know from like scripted comedy gets it in the neck so much. Within 30 seconds, people are ready. So it's just, this is a weird reaction.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Thank you.
Should we get into some emails, Tom?
Let's do it, baby boy. Let's do it. We've been weak on the emails recently, really.
What do you mean, weak?
We've only done like two sessions.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, yeah. We should really...
I feel like we've been quite serious and deep on this, Jim.
Yeah, but you know what? That's the concoction that makes the brew bubble.
Yeah, nice.
We don't know what's coming.
No, we don't. You know, you might get a really funny episode. You might get an episode where two blokes sort of just are really down on themselves to the point where...
morosely chat about sort of, shit.
Yeah, where by the time they log off the Zoom, they're not sure if they're going to do another episode or not. Okay, so this is from the Timid Pigeon. Once again, thank you to the Swan for selecting the emails. I do appreciate you.
Wow.
I could have said that less aggressively. Dear the Wolf and Al, let me first say how much I love you both. And I just want to take this time to thank you for all the laughs you've given me over the year. Honestly, can't thank you enough. So the reason I'm emailing is about an incident that happened at my favourite skate park a couple of weeks ago that still upsets me. I'm a massive skateboarding fan. It's so good for my mental health and genuinely recommend it for everybody. It's just made such a positive impact in my life. Thank you, Timid Pigeon, for that recommendation. I fear that for Tom and I, it might be behind us, that starting that up. But anyway,
Anyway,
a same-sex couple walked through the skate park holding hands, and there was a group of BMXers at the park who were regulars, and they began to be dickheads by pretending to kiss, being derogatory camp, and saying things like crusty bumholes. That made me so angry and upset, I just yelled at, shut the fuck up, as manly and as angry as possible. But I'm a very small, skinny and unmanly guy, and I'm so unconfrontational. But I couldn't bear this couple thinking they weren't welcome at the skate park. The BMXers then started being confrontational and mean to me, so I skated away to the safety of my tinny, to which they started laughing at and calling me a pussy. I couldn't be asked to deal with it, so I decided to leave, even though it made me so angry and feel like I was running and I'd let these small-minded people win. I haven't properly been back since, so I've been worried a bit about being in an altercation when all I want to do is skate and have a good time. How do you think I should have handled the situation better, and how should I move on from it? It didn't solve the homophobia by running away, and I've only ruined going back to the park for myself. Your wise advice would be strongly appreciated. Much love and keep doing you, the Timid Pigeon.
Yeah, I'm changing this up, by the way, because you should be known as the Proud Pigeon or the Courageous
Correct.
Pigeon.
Correct.
You know what? It's really easy to speculate and sit here and, you know, we can give you all the advice in the world, but... you should feel comfort in the fact that when you saw two other people being mocked and that level of disgust and homophobia being thrown at them, the first thing that came to you was to say something and be defensive. And yeah, look, we've talked about this on here before, and we've talked about it a number of times, whereas we say that you need to be careful of that. And both me and Roma should both been guilty of, you know, in our lives, jumping off and saying things. But you should not feel any shame in what you've done, because I think it's the right thing. The trouble about, like, and this is a mental thing to say because it's, you know, but everything's comparative, right, is that you shouldn't let bullies and these fucking idiots, like, take skating away from you any more than you should let them sneer and fucking jest at two people for being homosexual. You should go back to that, the skate park, and feel proud about who you are. Look, the fact of the matter is that these idiots like this, and it is disgusting that, you know, when you see a group of, and we sort of, I don't know whether we've touched on it, but it's gang mentality, isn't it? It only takes one person within that group of BMXers to have that view and that way of thinking for the rest of them to follow suit. And I think that actually you calling them out has probably embarrassed them a little bit, and that they're sort of shouting their mouths off. It's a really negative, horrible way of being. And, like, you just think that their behaviour and their intolerance has ruined three people's day there. And that's, you know, there's probably other people there who have walked away going, actually, sort of credit to you, and probably wishing they'd said something. And, like, you know, it, don't let them take that, because, you know, however you find, whether it's skating or golf or boxing or whatever, like writing or keeping a journal, like however we find sort of a way of keeping our mental health and keeping that in check, should not be compromised by other people. I think that, you know, go down there and go down there proud in the fact that you stood by yourself. And if they give you any problem, hit 999 and, make sure that you get someone down there, or you call someone to come and help you out. But, like, it's I don't think they do anything. I think that, you know, and if they did, then write in again, and me and Ron will jump in the Wolf and Elmer Bill, and come down there.
Yeah, Just probably see how big they are and then fuck off again. Timid Pigeon, let me tell you this. The thing that most upsets me about this email, well, not most upsets me, the whole thing of like people being homophobic is upsetting. And then what upsets me more is that you think you didn't handle it well. Let me tell you something. You've said, I didn't solve the homophobia. It's not about solving the homophobia. That couple that walked through the skate park and had a load of BMXers like being fucking to them, they have heard you defending them and sticking up for them. And I'm telling you, you made a difference to those people, man. Because when you're in that situation and something like that happens, they'll be thinking immediately. I've talked about this before. I remember I was doing a gig in Barnstaple, and I asked a guy for a light, and I took the light and I was lighting the cigarette, and he goes, aren't you going to say thank you? And I said, I was just about to. And then he said, never mind saying thank you. You should apologize for being in this country in the first place, right? And then what happened to me in my head is I looked around that pub, and I couldn't help it, I assumed everybody thought like that because I was the only person of color in the whole pub, right? The reason I'm telling that story is that is how that same sex, that couple that came through, that's how they would have felt. Everybody's saying this. And then you said something. That's a fucking great thing you did, man. It's a fucking amazing thing you did. Do not underestimate how good that was, that thing you did. Okay? So don't beat yourself up about this. You should be congratulating yourself. Give yourself a pat on the back for what you did. You didn't run away. The situation became aggressive, so you left to protect yourself. That's not running away. Okay? So what I'm saying to you is, do not be hard on yourself. The next thing I'm going to say to you is, I agree with Tom. I don't think you should allow these pricks to stop you going to that skate park. If you like going to that skate park, you go back to that skate park. I can't guarantee you that it's going to be totally fine. It's going to be totally pleasant. There might be a little bit of afters, or not afters, but there might be a few comments. Do not let these people stop you going. You do whatever you've got to do to make sure it's comfortable for you to go back. Okay. You know, like Tom says, you know, going down with a couple of mates or whatever, just to feel a bit more comfortable. Just letting someone know what the situation is. Whatever it takes. I mean, I don't know how old you are, but just whatever it takes, do not let them change. You know, do not let these people stop you going to that skate park. You did a great thing.
It's a weird situation. You know, when like something spikes a thing of like, when I was young and I'd have probably been about 11 or 12 probably. And I was like I was a very, really good swimmer. Swimming was my thing. And my mum used to take me to take swimming on a couple times a week at a swimming class. And
yeah,
I used to sort of like just try and be a bit like sort of big man type thing, get changed in the sort of men's changing rooms. Like my mum, you know, I was at that age, so going on my own to get changed. Anyway, kind of older boys from my school, sort of this one day, really fucking picked, you know, just went for sort of like, just aggressively Mickey taking sort of thing. Threw all my clothes in the shower type thing. It was horrible. Do you know what I mean? And from that moment, I stopped going swimming. I just was like, I was too embarrassed to sort of tell my parents. I sort of just didn't want to go anymore because I just was so terrified of being in that situation again. And it was something that I look back and think, that was such an easy win for them. Like, it was such a sort of like, you know, and it probably meant nothing to them. It was not even like, They wouldn't even think twice about it. Yeah, I could have walked past them 100 times after that. It wouldn't even clock that it was me. Do you know what I mean? But for me, that was a big, big thing. It was a big part of my, you know, big part of my life for a long time because it felt like I was being singled out and picked on. And I thought that there was a reason they were doing that is because, you know, bullies will just forget. They'll go and bully someone else, you know?
Mm.
And, yeah, so if I can give you any personal advice, it's, as Romesh says, man, go back, do your thing.
Yeah. Good luck with it, man, and please let us know how it goes. Okay, this is from The Frog. Good afternoon, Wolf, Owl, Swan and the Cat. A long-time listener, first-time writer. Firstly, thanks for the countless hours of joy you give me on my commute to work, and thanks to Tom. This is a pretty sick thing I'm about to read out.
Really?
Thanks to Tom, who won't remember this, but he encouraged me to apply for my dream job last year in a brief encounter in a London train station. And I'm pleased to say I got the job.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow.
Mate, it's amazing, right?
Oh, yeah, wow. Nice, man. That's incredible.
Okay. It then goes on to be a bit of a sad dilemma. I write to you with a dilemma and a complicated one. I'll cut to the chase. A few months ago, my mother was diagnosed with lung cancer. She's responding well to treatment. However, this is just to prolong the time we have left together. Which is awful. This is what leads me to my dilemma. I come from a big family and I've got two brothers. Long story short, due to an ongoing family dispute caused by his wife, who made numerous attempts to hijack and ruin our wedding last summer due to jealousy, I no longer speak to one of my brothers. I've been encouraged by several members of the family to heal this rift before it becomes too late, with some stating I should do so for my poorly mother. I have no desire to fix the deteriorated relationship, but do not want them to overshadow things as a family go through a hard time. Have you guys ever experienced anything similar to this and can pass on some advice to a lonely frog who needs some sweet, sweet advice from some sweet, sweet souls? Tom?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard because me and Catherine have been through similar sort of things. Her family and mine. And I think it depends how deep the cut runs, I guess. You got to, if it's something that you can't come back from, with your brother, it's just kind of sort of truth of the matter, I hate saying that when it's something that's really serious, but you've got to, it's got to come from both of you to make this work. You can't be the one person who's turning around saying, because it's like anything, if it's like any sort of relationship, if one person's trying harder than the other to make it work, it's never going to work. You know, you've both got to enter into it willing to make a change and willing to make it work. So my advice, I guess, would be to try and scope out your brother, you and him, go and have a chat and have a see where he's coming from, how he feels. If it feels that he doesn't take any responsibility for how he treated you and your wife and how that had an effect on your life there, if he's not going to man up and sort of say, he's behaved in a bad way, then if I'm completely honest, it will be more negative on your mum and more negative on the family if you're both around just arguing, and it's just going to restoke a fire that probably should have just sizzled out quite some time ago. So I think, see what you could do on that. I think that the big thing is, whether you're chatting to him or whether you're not, your whole responsibility has to be towards your mother. And I think if you're the person I think you are, and it's not like I hand out a lot of advice to people in stations, you're a real credit. And I think, I think you've got all the instincts that you need to get through this. And man, my heart goes out to you, man. It's a tough time. And send in love and strength.
Great advice, Wolf. Listen, Frog, I'm really sorry to hear that you're going through such a tough time, man. It sounds absolutely rank. And but as Tom said, it's how bad this rift is really does kind of affect how relevant our advice is. But what I would say to you is that a few years ago, my dad passed away suddenly from a heart attack, and a combination of sort of grief and trying to sort out what was quite a complicated situation with my dad and his finances led to my brother and I having a big falling out, and I had a huge argument with him. I remember I was I was waiting to take, because my dad died just before Christmas, a couple of weeks before Christmas. I was with Lisa and the kids, we were going to Panto, and my brother phoned me up and we started having an argument in the foyer of the theatre. And I raised my voice because I was so heated about the whole thing, because obviously you're going through emotions and stuff like that. And he was saying stuff that I didn't want to hear, and I was saying stuff that he didn't want to hear. And I remember saying to him, I'll never forgive you for the way you're behaving like this, right now. And he said, I'll never forgive you for the way we were so steadfast. And I put the phone down on him, and then I went and the Panto is such a ridiculous back context of this thing, but the Panto had started, and I sat on the steps of the theatre, and I remember thinking, I can't see how I'm going to sort this out with my brother ever. And I'm sure he felt the same way. And it took a while, or it took a little bit of time and a bit of consideration for us to realise that, we were going through something, and And like, you know, I'm happy to say that my brother and I are now, you know, we're really super close, but it was shit. Do you know what I mean? And like, and so the thing that happened with my brother and I was like a mine. It was like a series of misunderstandings and beliefs that the other one was being inconsiderate, et cetera, that led to us having that blow up. And, you know, and then it pulls up all of these underlying things that you might have been carrying with you for all this time that family members tend to have. So I guess what I'm saying is my advice, not knowing enough detail, I think, to give you proper advice, is to say that it would be great if you could get yourself to a position where you're at least civil, you know, for the sake of your mum and for the sake of other members of the family, because it sounds like what you're going through is horrific. And you really don't want to do anything that's making that more horrific than it has to be. So if that means you can't be in the same room as somebody, that's going to make all sorts of situations difficult with regards to your mum and other members of your family. So I would encourage you to try and get yourself to a point where you can be civil and calm and reasonable when you're in the same room or talking to your brother. And then maybe in the future that could lead to you sort of repairing your relationship, but it might not. But I still think that, like, at the very least, you need to, you know, it'd be good if you get yourself to a point where you're all right, you can be in the same room. There's all sorts of situations where it's going to be a fucking nightmare if you two aren't talking to each other. Do you know what I mean? So yeah, I think it would be good if you get yourself to that point. In addition to that, I think, you know, family's family. It'd be good if you could get to a point where you could both understand where the other one's coming from and maybe sort of get past this. But look, I don't know how deep this thing is, man. So look, good luck with it. Good luck with it. And listen, I'm so sorry that you're going through the time that you're going through, man. It's horrific. It's absolutely horrific. And I hope you can get through it as well as you possibly can do. Good luck. Okay, do you want to do one more?
Let's do one more, my G. Okay. Elise has picked out two very deep emails.
I know. I think she, I think maybe she thinks we're finding this too easy. So we just like, fuck these guys up.
Also, we're both in sort of such a sort of like deep frame of mind right now.
Mate, this episode has got like a very different flavour, hasn't it?
It's so deep.
Oh, God. Okay, so this is anonymous.
Cool. That's a good sign.
Hi, as always, love the podcast. Been listening since day one. Thanks for finding time for this. It's brilliant. Three questions. Coming out of a relationship and finding it hard to bring myself to try again. Do you think it's possible for someone to find someone, or is this just my trajectory? Sorry for a hard one. Don't worry, mate. It's very much in keeping with the theme of what the Swan's been delivering to us. There's three questions there. I'll read them all.
Yeah.
Two, I'm re-listening to the old episodes. The spicy mackerel and potpourri stories remain the funniest things I've ever heard. My question, what do you re-listen / re-watch to bring joy? And three, are you ever going to do a shit episode? I'd love it. Thanks. Anonymous. Tom, you can handle those in any order you like.
Yeah, I'm going to go question one first up. Coming out of a relationship is always hard. It's tough. But what you got to do is jump back on the surfboard of relationships, of love, and try and navigate your way back to a shore, aka back to a resting place with someone that you are going to fall in love with. The person is out there. I have faith that you're going to find them. Don't give up on love, as I think Alison Hammond once said. Question two, what brings me joy is me and Catherine, probably old episodes of Curb Your Enthusiasm or Modern Family. Hit that up if we're feeling a bit down. Sometimes I hit the crisp off a little bit of In Between Us. That does make me chuckle. And question three, are we ever going to do a poo episode?
Is that like Michael Owen talking about films there?
We should probably, you know, what we should do is just do the shit episode and then just stick that on the back burner. And when we haven't got time to do another one, we just ping it out.
The reason we haven't done a shit episode is actually quite divisive. For as many people that are really into the idea of doing a shit episode, there are an equal number of people that think it's horrific whenever we talk about shit. So It's just a tricky one. I think what we do is, I think you're right, Tom, let's do a shit episode, but let's label it up. We'll have to do it as an extra one.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
And go, look, this is absolutely the shit episode. If you're not into listening to chat about scat, then you need to steer clear of this one.
So that's the answers to your three questions. My, you know what I'm doing right now? And I haven't done this before on this podcast.
Go on.
I'm sending out positive vibes, bro. Like a sunbeam.
I think that's what you do every episode, but all right.
No, but like, I'm genuinely zenning in. Like, so my positive vibes are going through my laptop, into Romish's laptop, and then through Romish's fingers and thumbs and heart, it's going to go to Lisa's iPad. Through Lisa's iPad, back to the emails that will go back to you. So, yeah.
Okay, there you go.
There we go, bro.
There you go. That's how the love beams work. Anonymous, first question. Do I think it's possible for someone to find someone because you're worried about being too old? Yes, I do think it's possible. And I think, like Tom said, if you want to find someone, you will. What I would advise you is to not think that, is to get yourself out of the thinking that being in a relationship is somehow makes you complete, because it's just not the case. Do you know what I mean? It's like, you know, we're pressured into the situation. We feel like we need to be with someone in order to be happy. And that just isn't the case. Do you know what I mean? You need to be with the right someone. So it's not a thing of like going, I need to find someone. I think there's a mistake that a lot of people make. They think they need to be with somebody rather than the right person. And that's why you'll speak to so many people, and when you see them with their other half or they chat about their other half, you think, I'm not really convinced that this is right for you. Do you know what I mean? So what I would say is 100% is possible, but don't sort of, I would encourage you to steer clear of the mindset that you've got to get straight back into a relationship as soon as you can. Do you know what I mean? Love yourself, then you can start loving someone else. Okay.
Boom, boom.
Question number two. This is a great question. My go-to to bring joy, American Office.
Oh, great call.
The American Office.
Ed Helms, by the way, in that is so underrated.
Oh, my God. The American Office is like therapy to me.
Oh.
It's like therapy to
perfectly
me.
Written. But
it's perfect. But like, I know it backwards, but I'll just put it on and I don't care if I know the episode back to front. There's something comforting about it.
Favourite character?
It's a great question. I quite like Stanley.
Good call. Stanley's a brilliant character. Yeah. Is it weirdly, actually, that if you were going to be anyone in that show, it would be Stanley, right?
Yeah, you're probably right. But it is like therapy to me. I just find it really relaxing putting it on. I really,
it's
really
beautiful.
Do.
Beautiful. Brilliant. I watched it. Yeah. You know what? I'd sort of watched episodes here, episodes there. But when Grace was born, that was the thing I watched, like, from episode one. And I just watched it all the way through. And, yeah.
There's an amazing story about when Steve... Because like, it's an interesting story about Steve Carell. Steve Carell became a megastar while he was filming The American Office.
Yeah, yeah.
And for whatever reason, they just didn't renew his contract. So the last few series, that Steve Carell's not in it. It's still great, but, you know, obviously you're missing Steve Carell. He's irreplaceable. But like when Pam goes, it's worth watching this episode and reading the backstory. So there's a bit where he's going to the airport and Pam, just sort of like the receptionist at Dunder Mifflin, she's almost misses him going. He's flying off to another part of the country. And then she runs through. He's taking his mic off. She runs through and she says something to him and they say goodbye to each other. And you don't hear what's said because they're not mic'd up. And the story is that apparently the director just said to her, just say to him what you actually want to say because he's leaving the show. And so that's just them. That was just his way of capturing what looks like a really poignant kind of chat. It's so beautiful, man. It's so beautiful.
I'm literally just Googling something because it's got one of my favourite. I think actually weirdly that one of the best quotes of that show was Ed Helms when he says in the last episodes, I wish there was a way to know you were in the good old days before you actually left them.
Oh,
what an amazing thing, man! That's just
mate, when he said that, man, it's just amazing. What an amazing show!
Yeah,
what an amazing show, man! Check it out. Right, Tom. Time for us to jet, my G. And I've really got a jet because I promised Theo I was going to see him before his bedtime.
Cool, okay. How do you follow Ed Helms from the office? This is how. There was two sweet, sweet cats.
Yeah. There's an argument that doing that quote was a mistake, wasn't there?
Yeah.
But anyway, good luck.
I'm going to muddle through. Okay, there's two cats. Well, one's a kitten and one's a fully grown cat. And they are sitting on a doormat as night comes in. And the little kitten looks at the big cat and he says, Yo, wise cat, I am so scared when the night comes in. I'm scared of the dark. It terrifies me. And, and the old cat says, yo, but you love the day, right? You love the sunshine. You like the light. And he is like, yeah, of course I do. I love the sun. I love being out during the day. Even when it rains, I kind of dig it because I can see shit. And the old cat looks at me and said, the truth of the matter is, it's never always dark and it's never always light. We live in a world of ever-changing shades. And you're never that far away from dusk to dawn as you are as from morning to eve. And actually, we're a little bit like that ourselves. You see, as cats or people or anyone in the world, it's sometimes easy to think that you're sitting in the middle of the night and you're miles away from dawn. Well, it's actually kind of cool to think you're sitting at lunchtime and you're miles away from night. The truth of the matter is, shades are always going to change and days are always going to change to night and your brain's always going to do the same. Enjoy the sun, but don't fear the night. It's only there to make the sunshine richer.
Wow. That's lovely. Do you know what? I doubted you for a minute because the cat stuff really felt like it wasn't going anywhere. But well done, man. That was beautiful.
You know me. I was genuinely worried myself that the wheels were coming off. But
yeah, I'm not surprised.
That's why I speed up through the last couple of sentences.
guys, I'm sorry if you don't like this different flavour of... we're normally kind of... normally a bit more upbeat on this, but today we've done it a little bit like, you know, when you turn on the radio at about 2 a.m. and they're having a phone-in thing. It's a bit of that kind of
vibe. I think it's a good notion that next week we'll do this at about 9 o'clock on Saturday or Sunday morning.
I think morning episodes are better. I think this is a huge error.
But anyway,
take care of yourselves.
Love and peace, people. Bada boom.
Much love.
Peace! Yeah.
If you have a problem, opinion, feedback, or anything at all, please email us at wolfowlpod@gmail.com. That's wolfowlpod@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you, mainly because we don't have any content ideas. Thank you.